This is the Rolling Often podcast, and we're back, back again, not just with me, not just with Dave, but with our two guests from last time, doing a reoccurrence. A reinforcement training or episode, I don't know. We've got Alex and Zach on again, as we mentioned last time. They're going to be our friends for a couple of episodes here. And we're continuing our train of thought of Gen AI, everything Gen AI, LLM, ops, and, well, fill in your own hype word here, I guess.
So several years ago, we had Alex talking to us about ML ops, how to get machine learning into a productionized kind of pipeline and workflow and all the bells and whistles and things that are needed to make that really work in the real world. And he and Zach are back to talk to us about what that looks like with Gen AI and large language models with LLM ops. So are you ready to be once more taken to school?
Every day a new acronym. Let's go.
I was just going to ask, you know, we've used the term LLM a lot. Alex, you even mentioned SLM. Like, what's the most, like, basic definition of a large language model?
You're getting all the easy questions, man.
It's the ability of a model to generalize over and understand, and able to understand the context of the text that you're providing and being able to reason over it. So to me, it's like an LLM is just kind of like a brain that's been taught up to a certain amount of information. So think of it like as a student that's been trained all of these topics that have been loaded in all of this information, and now it's able to reason over it. It's not just it predicts the next token, but it is able to coherently summarize and put the information together. So it's able to, let's say, like, classify, it provides your answers. It has a lot of the tasks that traditional machine learning model does not provide. That kind of makes sense. Maybe, yeah. Zach, you take a better stab.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm taking another true stab at it, but to add on, I think the large part is important because the model's able to develop a sense of context and relationships between, you know, different words because of the volume of text and the corpus that it was trained on. And the number of parameters in the model. So the large is important because that's kind of the how it's able to do these things that Alex was talking about. When we get into, you know, the small, and I'm predicting here, but I think the topics will become more localized and the training data will get better. So it's not necessarily as much required or not as many parameters required in the model. And then, you know, we've already kind of lightly touched on the quantization and different improvements on the technical side as well. But the data also supplements that.
Makes sense. All right. So I think we've covered a basic intro to some of the fundamentals. Let's start to talk a little bit about what it takes to actually operate and adopt one of these kind of things. Alex, you, me, and Jan many moons ago talked about AI ops. Now we're starting to talk about LLM ops. You know, I guess let's start off with the most basic question. You know, what is LLM ops? Like, what does that actually mean to the layperson?
So, LLM ops, think of it as an extension of ML ops. And ML ops, as if you remember, it's the ability to bring together, like, people, processes, and tools to automate machine learning development deployment. LLM ops is similar. It's an extension of the ML ops. It's to bring these large language models, small language models, or Gen AI applications to production. There is a difference in how you do the actual the development, the assets that are there, the evaluations are going to differ between MLOps and LLM ops. And as well, you have different target audience that kind of changes. So typically in MLOps, you have your traditional machine learning engineers and data scientists that are responsible and that would work together. And LLM ops, you have your now AI engineers or more your traditional software engineers that are used to going to be working with prompt engineering, so going to be able to develop applications and use different frameworks and tools like LangChain or PromptFlow to develop essentially the workflows to develop the AI applications. And then you have your traditional like app developers that would help you build around the web applications or the full scale applications. You have difference and different types of assets that you typically, so with machine learning operations, typically we would create, you would have your model as a typical asset that you would version and create from scratch. A lot of times in LLM ops, you would be reusing a pre-built one, or you would be responsible for creating your own fine-tunable model. So within those assets, you also, like an ML ops, you have to create containers or an environment that would allow you to pre-package your model that would run it in a particular environment that would have all of the bits that are required, like your Python library, your source code, your source scripts. With LLM, it's different. So you have to keep track of like agent, plugins, prompts, and we can talk through a lot of these, but trying to keep it kind of at a higher level. So metrics are different. This is like, how do you keep your accuracy? Typically, you have your traditional like area under the curve as the typical. Within LLM ops, you're going to start looking. Also, you have like accuracy and quality, but the metrics are different. You can have like LLM-based metrics that would measure the quality. So it's essentially LLM measuring its own quality. So you can have GPT-4 or let's say like a Llama model or a Mistral model doing quality assessments against how well is the LLM responding to you. You'll have some of the other metrics and evaluations, like figure out if there's any harm, if there's bias, toxicity, how well it's actually responding, what is how well the model responded to the information that it had. So if you provided some of its context and the question, how well did it actually do, you'll have associations like what are the costs, let's say how much did it actually, what is the cost for, let's say, token per request, how fast did it respond, your latency. Those are kind of the key metrics, and some of that are higher level.
Yeah,
because that's a bit of a problem at the moment, right? Because with the, was it again, classical ML AI you talked about, you had the ROC curves, you had the confusion matrix, if you want. But a lot of my people I talk to that want to try to leverage LLMs and Gen AI to do their chatbots, whatever, they ask me, what's the best model to use? And that actually is the question there is, okay, which model is the best? But how do you compare these? Because there is no ROC curve for these LLMs. All that I've been able to figure out myself is do customer testing, A/B testing, let people give thumbs up, thumbs down, and kind of crowdsource your quality stuff. But that's not how a big entity, big communities, big companies want to start something new like this. It's a risk for them, right? To have, I mean, we had the Canada Airlines or something like that. They had a chatbot that kind of started giving away free tickets. So there are risks there. Is there any advancement happening today to get these kind of quantification of the quality, performance quality of an LLM? Is that happening? I know I've heard people are working on it, but I haven't had any other information there.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the primary goal of LLM ops. When you take a step back, look at it from 10,000 feet, right? How do I get these things into production? Which basically comes down to three things. How do I know it's safe? How do I know that it's producing correct results, you know, mitigating hallucinations and you know, actually accurate and useful? And then is it performant, just as you would assess any other web application? Now what changes with all of that is the how do you assess natural language? Back to what we talked about in the beginning with the probabilistic versus deterministic, right? The way you assess all of this is going to change entirely. You mentioned the Air Canada example. My personal favorite is a prompt injection attack on a Chevy dealership, where a user went in and was able to, you know, quote unquote, buy a Chevy Equinox for $1 by prompt injecting, and he got the bot to say, "Yes, this deal is legally binding. No takesies backsies."
See, that's how the world changed. In my day, we were happy if we could crack a website to have a free pizza. Now people get cars.
That's right. So to answer your question, I think there's many different ways to evaluate these models. And whenever a new large language model is released, you know, you saw this with the Databricks model a week or two ago. There's these benchmarks that are out there that are used to assess these models for different areas. But when you dig a level deeper into these benchmarks, there's not a consistent prompting strategy or a consistent methodology that's used to do the comparisons for each, because the prompting is so easy to change, and anyone can change it when they go to take these models for their own use cases, right? So the evaluation ultimately comes down to being much more localized to specific use cases. And you know, maybe ChatGPT or OpenAI is the best model for use case A, but maybe Mistral is the best model for use case B. And that is where LLM ops becomes important, at that local level, that specific level for each use case.
Now, you mentioned the prompt injection attack, which is something that's happening more and more often. It's not just a prompt injection, because you can have actually models that are tainted while they train to always give certain replies if a certain word is in a prompt, something like that. Does LLMOps also look at that part of the, let's call, security around the models? Is it also part of the LLMOps thing?
Yeah, I think that's an important piece. I kind of break it down into three pillars. There's the evaluation and testing, which you would do before a release. But for situations like this, there's also the monitoring piece, which is in line with your deployment, where you're screening inputs and outputs live. You can kind of use some pre-built models or some filters to basically tell in real time, am I facing an adversary? You know, is someone trying to prompt inject right now? Or the other side of that is, instead of screening the user's input directly, you can also screen the model output directly and say, okay, is this a safe response in real time? And the third pillar, I'd say, is the feedback, which you talked about briefly and we can get into later, but that's the thumbs up, thumbs down. Alex, I don't know if you have anything to add.
Yeah, so this is definitely, like, safe and responsible AI is one of the critical aspects of LLM ops, and this is where you do go through the live monitoring is critical, because a lot of the times when you're evaluating the systems, and this is part of the tooling kind of conversation of LLM ops, is like, how do you do these massive at scale evaluations? There's different techniques that we can talk about, but being able to also in real time to have other systems that are sitting in front of your LLM that will mitigate the injections, that's the way that I was describing on the input side. And same way, you want to make sure that the response that is being generated is also safe and responsible. A lot of times, those checks, let's say for the output, could be already built in into the model. But a lot of times, it's an external system that's sitting, that is a separate model that's actually going in and doing classification and telling you, okay, it's triggering different types of categories of unsafe responses back. So essentially, you could control it both on the input and the output side.
So are we doomed? Because there was this big company, one of them tech leaders out there, that had this new LLM put out with a lot of fanfare, and then you asked them to give you a typical Pope, and you got a female Pope or a black Pope, and there were some other kind of things. I mean, I'm not going to name names because we don't like bashing companies. If you want to, go ahead. But I mean, this is a huge company, and I'm sure our listeners know who I'm talking about anyway. I would kind of expected that if anybody in the world somewhere is doing LLM ops, they should kind of be doing it a little bit. But if you look at the result of it, I mean, are we doomed? Obviously, it's just that people need to get used to this, and it's something that has to have a slow movement towards adoption, towards knowing, because are we still figuring this out as we go at the moment?
Due to the nature of the market and everybody trying to compete at such basis, that the QA is definitely, as we've seen by the use case that you're describing, it's been missed. So everybody's trying to compete, I think. And this is where it's like, if they're trying to get their products, the models out as soon as possible. And sometimes it does come at a cost of not being responsible.
But also a real physical cost, because their stock price, they lost like $100 billion that day, I think, when that came out. Oh, no, that was when they did the first, extrasolar planet, whatever. It gives you, if you're a big company, it gives you a big reputation damage, right? Sorry, Zach, you want to say something?
Yeah, I would, without being on the inside, I would maybe argue that instance, that release, was almost too much LLM ops, too much control, too much overbearing, focus on safety. And I think that's why it's important to look at each use case independently and make these decisions on that basis. An example I like to use to kind of flip the script and get people thinking a different way is, imagine the case where there's a customer service training chatbot. So you're using this chatbot to train your customer service representatives. The bot acts as a customer in a chat window, and the CSR responds. Now, unfortunately, oftentimes when people reach out to customer service, they're very frustrated, and sometimes they'll swear at customer service reps or be very rude or impolite. And in a normal setting, you think of monitoring for safety, and you think of a chatbot response swearing, and it's something that's automatically filtered out immediately. But when you think about it in a different context, you want the customer service training bot to swear at the reps so that they know how to respond when that actually does happen in the real world, right? So I think, in the case of that specific model's release, there was an overbearing amount of attention paid to the LLM ops on safety and inclusion that hindered the realism.
Yeah, I heard it called robocopping, if you get that reference.
I like that. I'm going to start using that.
All right. So that was a little bit more about how to use large language models and Gen AI tooling in the real world, how to get it incorporated into what that looks like. Again, really good to understand a little bit of the differences between kind of, just pure ML and sort of AI ops, and what that really sort of means, and what what some of the differences are. It sounds like this is still something that's very much coming together. Some of the patterns are quite familiar, but there's some differences here for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I would have hoped that with all of the AI and LM craze we've had over the years, that people had kind of already gotten used to putting up pipelines like this. But no, it's still, again, it's also, fall on a different demographic, right? I mean, the old AI craze went really straight for the data scientists, data engineers mostly. Consumers, and if I not consumer, more the consumers in a corporate environment weren't really that affected because it was like a black box for them. Gen AI and LLMs, they really hit directly pretty much everybody in an entire corporation. So I guess it is a different way of looking at things again. Why, if you look at the UX, at accessibility, at ways of making this not just usable but also secure.
Yeah. I think one of the differences, though, is going to be seen when you start to look at the adoption curve. You know, we had the sessions a little while back talking about the state of open source, and one of the things that continually kind of stood out to me is the number of people, for example, not even using configuration management. Like, if you've got people that can't even, you know, fumble their way through, you know, having a config management platform, the chances of them actually implementing something like this, relatively small. So I think we're going to see, you know, organizations that are more mature, we're going to see heading down this path. Organizations that are less mature, we're going to see them adopting, you know, black box SaaS services that they don't need to think about, that they can just, you know, plug their product, their platform, their branding onto, and, you know, just go, hey, yay, we've done it.
Yeah, the problem is that even with those black box approaches, a lot of those black boxes are built by Gen AI, by people who don't really know what they're doing. So I think the caveat emptor is really important here. Sure, you can outsource a lot of this stuff, but make sure your partners are vetted, that they are actually, that they know what they're doing. Because, I mean, we've talked about snake oil before on the podcast, but this is going to be a whole new gold rush on snake oil.
Yeah, indeed. Indeed. Well, those that are selling it are going to make bank. Those that are buying it are probably going to be pretty disappointed.
They will be educated. That's always a good thing.
Yeah. And sometimes those lessons are painful, but the painful lessons are also the ones you remember. So maybe that's okay. I don't think it's okay, but it is also life. Well, anything else from you?
Nope. That's life.
All right. Well, once again, thanks to Alex and Zach. We're two episodes in, two more to go. Really appreciate them spending some time with us. And that is all the time we have for today. You can support this podcast by becoming a Patreon. Every contribution really does help. We are on YouTube. You can like, subscribe, hit the notification bell, comment, do all the YouTube things. You can also go to roaringelephant.org for a link to our Patreon page and for more information about the podcast. You can also send feedback to ye olde email, podcast@roaringelephant.org. Until next time, my name is Lessons Learned Dave.
And my name is, now that I've got Dave replaced by Gen AI, let's operationalize him. Yup.
And we look forward to talking to you next week.
Goodbye.
See you then.